Okay, so we're here with David Markson from Siemens. So David, why don't you tell us a little bit about Siemens and what we're here to talk about.
Siemens is a very, very large corporation. My particular division is called Infrastructure Logistics. This particular building, our primary customer is the United States Post Office, although we deal with a lot of other customers that move mail and packages and products. We deal with FedEx, UPS, DHL. In this particular building, we do everything from building physical machines that sort letters or packages all the way up to the software that runs those machines, and also the software that runs a lot of all the back-end servers that process all the data. Delivering all that mail generates a lot of information. You have graphics images, you have databases of addresses, volume reports, business reports, end-of-day reports, throughput statistics. So there's a lot of information that's generated from all of this processing. My particular group is the software group that writes all of the high-level software. We write software that runs the actual machines. The machines are controlled through a series of firmware that is also written in this building, and then the software controls the firmware. So the firmware would turn a motor on, or it would tell a gate to go left or right. The software tells the firmware, make that gate turn now, make that gate flip, redirect the mail piece on the physical machines. On the servers, we write all of the software that runs the server. So for instance, we'll have a server that maintains all of the addresses in the United States. So when a mail piece goes past a camera, it will read the mail piece and check to make sure that's a valid address. For example, a handwritten address would come across, and the OCR engines would look at that, and let's say it found an O. Well, that O could be a 0, could be an A, could be a C with a very closed loop, could be any number of characters. So as the OCR is processing, it's going to build a hierarchy tree of all the possible addresses that that address could be, and then it will take those and look against the address database, and it will pick the best choice of what that address could possibly be, and then it will sort that mail.
Okay, great. So we're here with David Hudspeth, who's a software engineer on the ArtRead project. And David, as we understand, the ArtRead project is really sort of one of the more cutting-edge projects that you have going on here at Siemens,
right,
working on a bunch of R&D and the future of some of the software that you guys will be releasing. So why don't you tell us a little bit about ArtRead and what it's all about?
Okay. ArtRead is the latest version of our commercial OCR, and we're trying to basically take things that we've done in the postal market and make it available for commercial customers and operate for them, and they've got a whole different set of standards as far as the way things should look and feel, how easy is it to use, things of that nature.
So when most people think about OCR software, they think about, you know, something you can buy off the shelf or some third-party library you can purchase. Why don't
right.
you talk us a little bit about your OCR software and what makes it unique?
Okay, we have a homegrown OCR system we've developed for many years, and it's very specialized for dealing with postal applications. Particularly, we get images that come from a camera on a transport of a mail piece, and we have to analyze that mail piece, find all of the characteristics of it that will determine either billing information or how do we sort this, get it to where it's going, any special handling that it requires, if it has to be sent back to the sender, if there's a forwarding label on there, we have to find that and tell it this is where it's actually going now, even though it was originally addressed here. Any optional endorsements. So that has to run on a system, get the image, process it, find all these different bits of information, figure out, you know, which of these address blocks is the real one that we need to send it to, and get the result out as quickly as possible so the transport that's running 16 images or 16 mail pieces a second can keep up. Because the mail's transferring at, I think, 4 meters a second on a lot of these machines, and there's very small gaps going there.
Great. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about some of the key requirements and challenges that you guys are looking to achieve and the challenges that you're going to face with ArtRead?
A lot of the challenges, just again, we're running in a very tight thing, tight schedule. For ArtRead, since it's a commercial one, we're not tied to, we're running on this machine. So we have to be very flexible with how many machines we're running on. Some of them we need an answer back in 600 milliseconds. Other ones we get 2 seconds to get an answer back. And we range anywhere from 10,000 mail pieces an hour to, you know, close to 43,000.
So what is the status of this project at the moment? I mean, are you guys in development, testing?
We're in beta right now at one site, and there are still some... We're in beta in one phase, and we're still developing other additional functions and features for it.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we're expanding the interface so that there's multiple different flavors so that we can talk to, you know, flats machines and letters machines, and exposing a third-party API so that somebody that doesn't use one of our transports wants to use our OCR, they still have the capability of doing that.
Alright, so now we're in our test facility, and I've got a beta of the our prototype of the ArcMe system. This is the UI for it right here. We've got this is hooked up to the sorter behind it, and I'm just going to go through a walkthrough of the new UI, things that we're playing with, the way it interacts with the user.
And so we're going to be talking about this a little bit later on as you go through the design walkthrough, but the ArtRead user interface is actually a Windows Presentation Foundation
right.
UI,
so this
right?
This is a WPF app. We actually got our graphics artist to come here and design it. And, you know, we get a little glare effects and a little bit of texture to it that there's no way I would have done by myself. we get a few additional things, you know, animations that come up when you hit things. We're designing for more so it's possible to be used with the touchscreen. Ideally, they never touch it, but whenever they want to see how things are going or control certain things, you know, we can turn on certain processing or turn it off. If you want to run certain tools, there's different capabilities they want to be able to do. Turn on image capture if you want the mail to capture while we're going. Right now, we're currently on system control. Start simulators, stop the software, shut down the system, things of that nature. Any OCR specific parameters, are we in letters mode, do we want to handle process of script, do we turn that off, things of that nature.
You went with sort of dark UI scheme. Is it just a nod to the fashion, or is it really sort of it serves some purpose, some function?
Here, this is just a flashy kind of prototype we wanted to make, but since we're using WPF, we have the options of swapping out styles for things. We also plan on having another one that's brighter for dark environments or things like that. So that way the user can select, depending on the environment they're in, which one works better for them.
Does it have anything to do with that, the letters are mostly white and they will be high contrast on this white?
For here, in a bright environment, you get a nice dark background, the image will show up very clearly. A lot of the things we're trying to do is make it a little bit more fluid, where we're not constricting the image to you only have this much space. The image takes up as much room as it wants. Everything else is just kind of periphery floating on top of it. If you want to move the image, zoom in as much as you want, you can do that too.
Well, great. Why don't we take a look at what that's like running some samples through the machine?
So this is the close-up of the ArcRead GUI. As we start running, go ahead and start the machine. As we start running mail through here, you'll see the mail start coming up as it changes. We refresh about twice a second, and we'll have boxes that will start recognizing where we're reading the address. So a bunch of these. Down here we've got what we've actually read. You can see we're reading upside down.
And you can see behind back there with all the mail running through. That's cool.
Yeah. They're looking at the mail piece. You know, they want to get out here. We can look at certain areas, zoom in on certain parts, reset it.
Very cool. Thanks, man.
No problem.
All right, great. So we just saw a demo of the ArtRead prototype and saw it saw some mail running through the system. Why don't you give us an overview of the high-level design and the different pieces of how the software works?
All right. Well, the most visible aspect, obviously, is the user interface. But really, there's a lot of stuff that's going on behind the scenes. Our OCRs are running in there. We've actually got multiple instantiations of that. and they communicate through a process that we have that's called we call the broker, and that's how all these bits communicate. Now the UI, we've got a component where we wrote a wrapper around it that we call the managed broker. And this is a small DLL we have that wraps this functionality to expose that communication mechanism through there.
And so the broker is existing components.
Broker's existing component. It was written probably 10, 15 years ago. Rarely has changed since then. Just very high-speed memory map files to do inter-process communication. So we're actually hooking into that framework and exposing that through a managed interface. So instead of having to have a thread that's constantly pulling off of things, we have we fire events that happen, and we can subscribe to those events in a C# application, and we just link against the managed broker assembly, and we have that information available. Also, what we've got there to communicate to the outside world, we have a result manager. He's also talking to the managed broker, and he's the guy that keeps track of the stats as far as this is how many pieces that are coming through here, this is how fast we're going, this is how many 11-digit results we got versus 5-digit, what type of processing is going on. He controls that. He also talks to the broker to tell these guys, I want you to do barcode reading, I want you to do script reading, turn off script reading, whether we're doing move lookups, things of that nature. So that's these components. Now all of these reside on our ArtRead computer, and that's what we call ArtRead. And they will talk to, well, I'll probably drew that too high, but so the transport is what's controlling the machine, the actual mail sorting machine. And so what happens here is this guy talks to a client DLL that's written in C#, and we expose an unmanaged wrap around that, so the guys who are writing native code can actually talk to that. So this gives them a very nice clean interface. All they need to do is literally initialize, send an image, and then listen for result messages. And we bundle all those up so it's very easy for them to use. We hide all the fact that, hey, there's a Ethernet connection going on here. This is not actually living on the system. And then they're able to, you know, start, stop, runs, all that kind of good stuff. So all of this area right here was written, you know, and has been around for the past 10, 15 years. The new stuff that we're doing for the ArtRead components on this side, you know, we've got a wrapper for the managed broker. This is obviously C++ CLI, so that we can handle the bridge between the two. The UI is written in WPF. We're actually using a little bit of CCR in there that I think you've talked about DPR already. There's some utilities that we wrote that we're actually recycling for this guy. For like the result tracking, this is a very similar mechanism to what we do for the mail pieces that we're sorting in there. For the UI, we're using that to synchronize things because there's a lot of stuff going on in the background. We don't want to be, you know, busy worried about thread synchronization issues like that.
You had mentioned earlier that you're using linked XML as well.
Yes, actually, we are. The OCRs originally had some proprietary format for TL. For where we stored the results, they've moved to XML. And so when the result comes out, this guy gets an XML message. We've got a library that we use that has linked XML to where we can get that, query the result instead of this huge XML blob. Now we're able to think, oh, you know, this is the ID for it, this is the read result, these are where the postnets are found. When you saw the UI with the coordinates on there, that's in the XML. The OCR found that, and then the user interface is taking that and saying, render these polygon on top of the image that we have for this.
And so this is all written in C# 3.0?
Yes, all of this, these components are both in C# 3.0. We started with 2.0 and Visual Studio 2005. While we were working on it, we managed to update to 2008, and so we're starting to take advantage of like Link, which we didn't have before, and then a lot of the features for C# 3.0 just make it a lot easier to deal with inline delegates, things of that nature.
Great. So in thinking of the project and adopting, you know, new technologies like .NET Framework 3.5 SP1 and WPF and C# 3.0, what were some of the things that worked well, you know, made the overall development of the software easier, and what were some of the things that were a bit of a challenge?
Well, pretty much, dealing with C# is just a lot easier. I was actually pleasantly surprised that we didn't have problems with like memory leaks, memory fragmentation. We deployed stuff in the field, let it run for 3 weeks, and no issues. Pretty much our main concern, anything that's going to be processor intensive, things of that nature, we tend to do with native code where we need to. But anything where we can get away with it, or we're just sitting there waiting 90% of the time for an event to happen, and all we're taking is a result in an XML format, bundling that up, sending it over to Ethernet, we tend to do that in C# just because we can use all the libraries that are already there, and it's a lot easier to maintain.
So do you think you ended up getting a fair amount of productivity because you're using C# and these higher level APIs?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just little things, editing config files and reading those. I mean, we've able to use XML serialization to write all our config files and deserialization. So all you have to do is update our config object, and we've got all those things there. We don't have to worry about adding new things every time we have a minor update. The image component. Fantastic. I mean, we've got a TIFF image. I don't even have to tell it what image format it's in. We get this image off to the broker. I throw that at the imaging component and say, hey, render this thing. And it provides an image for me, and that's what I display. I don't care that it's a TIFF or it could be JPEG, which has been just great. I mean,
so you just use the image tag in WPF and boom.
Right. Well, yeah. So I just update the image source and spawn a CCR task to say, once you get this stuff in memory, convert that to an image that I can assign to the image tag, and there it is. We're actually using a lot of data binding for a lot of that. There's some mail piece objects that's in there, and then we update that mail piece object as the thing comes in and it's available.
And you'd mentioned in the demo that you guys are looking at using things like styling and
right. So that actually was fairly useful, you know, for the buttons. At first, we were doing this, and it's all mouse based and all that, and great. But now we want to do touchscreen, and you need big fat buttons so that your fingers aren't accidentally mashing the wrong thing. So we update the style to say, hey, these things must be at least 60 pixels tall, 60 pixels wide. It changes properties and everything. So it's really nice in that regard. And you know, you don't have to worry about all the minor details for like the left-hand to right-hand code that you did for WinForms and things of that nature.
So what were some of the challenges that you faced, you know, tackling all these new technologies?
Well, the big one for WPF has a quite a bit of a learning curve if you're used to WinForms style of thinking. And since that was my background coming into it, and a lot of these things were just like, hey, we need something out the door tomorrow, I was able to fall back to my WinForms knowledge, which actually I think is a nice selling point. You know, there's nothing that you're used to doing that doesn't work anymore. It's just now there are better ways of doing it, and it's just a matter of learning those. So a lot, you know, after we'd done that, I started reading up on a lot of different stuff. Was it Carl Schiffer? There's a lot of guys on that team doing model view or MVVM, and they have a bunch of tools. And so you start looking at, okay, this is the WPF way of handling things, and you start looking at that. So hey, I can delete half my code, and it's more robust, and things just happen automatically for me, and that's been great. So I mean, once you get to that point, it's a lot easier to deal with. And we have some debugging where I want to do, we've got a new camera on there and it's got the image oriented differently. Well, I can just put some sliders on there, data bind it to the translation properties, and you know, it's not a whole lot of code that I have to do for custom rendering. The box that we draw on there, that's all handled with a standard controls that are just on there. I take a polygon, data bind that to a rectangle object, and there it is. So there's a lot of that thing where it's just a lot nicer to deal with. And in the past, when I've been working on GUIs of that type, very intensive GDI plus, where you're just digging down low level and have to render everything you've got was pretty much custom control. And now we're able to build them up how we need to.
So let me ask you, why do we have multiple OCR components running there?
That's just so we can meet the throughput requirements. When we're running, if you figure each of these things has access to a database with every single address in the United States, there's a lot of memory is required in there. We're running, in some cases, 16 mail pieces second. We can achieve more throughput by parallelizing these things. And so, first one gets the first piece, next one gets the next piece. By the time we're on the sixth one, hey, there's another OCR available, we can get them working on it. So just to help the throughput.
So I presume that UI, OCR, RM, they are all residing within the same process.
No, these are all separate processes. So the managed broker is just an assembly, it's just a DLL that hooks into the broker that's running on the system. Each of these guys will link to that DLL, and they use that to get access to it. But the UI and the result manager are separate processes.
Okay, so UI and results manager are separate processes. What about OCR?
The OCR is a separate one as well.
For each one, or
each one's a separate instance.
Okay. And how do you bring the whole system up? I mean, who controls sort of the startup of the system?
Right now, there's a framework that we've built around that the broker is actually a member of, and that handles spawning off everything.
So you essentially can control the number of OCR.
Right. So through config file, we can say, hey, we want you to run six or four of these, or however many we need in order to get the throughput that we want.
And so essentially, the broker plus OCR, that part is something that.
Right.
Have existed before.
Right, these are pretty much like the legacy parts that are, you know, we've had these for 10, 15 years. Now the OCR we keep updating, but we've got an interface defined for that so we can swap out different OCRs if we need to. And for the rest of it, it's just kind of a framework that's been there. But what we're doing is linking to this framework through interop, and then we're able to present the information, render it a little bit nicer. And control how the system performs.
So right now, this all those components reside on the same physical computer.
Right.
Is there an option to actually distribute them across multiple nodes?
From within here, no. What we're actually looking at doing, and we're not there yet, right now the UI is designed, so all he does is render information from this guy. He's got no real brains behind him at all. And theoretically, it is possible, you know, if we break this connection here and do something like that, we're actually evaluating doing some WCF for there, then we could actually move the UI to another place. There's no reason why it has to exist on that box.
Right. But you are quite satisfied with the fact that, you know, all of your OCR will always reside on the same...
Right. All the OCRs are going to be, you know, they're always going to be on the same box, and that's just what that thing does. I mean, there's actually a lot of horsepower required to get those things going, because... there's a lot of information they have, and we have to lock down the system so it doesn't page, because there's a lot of, we need very quick access. If we start paging, we'll fall behind.
Okay. So the other question I have is, can you talk a little bit more about your use of coordination concurrency runtime? It seems to me like you use it as a sort of event broker within your UI.
Right. Actually, I use some components that we wrote for... synchronization of things, because for the UI, we actually wrap the broker events in there. So that way, as each of those things come up, there's now a new task that's put on a port for the CCR. When this guy has free time, you know, as he's going, he gets notified of each of those, and their handlers will fire off for each of those. For example, when the mail piece comes in, that image is big. They can vary depending for letters. You're looking at probably about 4 megabyte grayscale. For flats, we see up to 16 megabytes, and so I don't want the UI to just freeze while we're trying to load that image. It needs to be going, you know, while the mail's there. So we spawn off a separate task to get the image component, the time to render the image, and then we just pass it along when it's available. Same thing for like the results, the statistics update while the system's going, and we just handle all of those concurrently with that library.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Okay, so we're here with Ethan Johnson, who you're a software engineer here at Siemens.
Yes.
And you work on the Delivery Point Resolver project.
Yes.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about the project and a little bit about the technology used.
Okay. Delivery Point Resolver project is basically an address lookup where we needed to look up addresses in the national database to get zip codes to put barcodes on mail that's running on a sorting machine. And we have a system that does this, but we were looking to create the next generation of it.
And so why were you looking to, what were some of the problems you were facing that motivated you to build a new version?
Well, for address lookups, the requirements change a lot. USPS comes up with new rules all the time, and after a while, it gets
it gets unwieldy to keep adding in new rules, modifying rules. And the other point is that we were interested in taking advantage of new hardware. The original system is single-threaded, and obviously they can't take advantage of the multi-core processors that are coming out now. So we really wanted a multi-threaded system that was more maintainable than the current one.
So what were some of the key requirements for this new version?
Well, of course, the multi-threading and the maintainability, but we also have some very specific constraints for running fast enough to sort the mail on the machines, because they run at a set speed. We have a window of between probably 20 and 50 milliseconds that we need to do a lookup into a national database of probably 90 million addresses, get back all the potential matches, and then do all the matching logic rules to determine which is the correct answer to put on the mail piece.
So I have a question. So since you already have a system in existence, which was single threaded, but it was satisfying you in terms of the performance, right? So you were able to actually recognize the addresses in the allotted amount of time. So now you're saying you want a multi-threaded system where, you know, you obviously will be able to do a lot more processing. What does it buy you? I mean, are you after, you know, sort of limiting, even shrinking the amount of time you need to process even more? Or are you after the accuracy? And this additional processing will give you more accuracy and save, you know, some manual labor for U.S. Postal Service?
Well, obviously both are good. And they're potentially things that are benefits that we could try to realize with the system. You know, taking advantage of the extra hardware, we could potentially do more in that amount of time, or we could reduce that amount of time in, if there's other things. Because the actual lookup itself is not the only thing that has to happen between, you know, while the mail piece is going by on the system. So the more we can reduce that lookup time, the better it is, because some of the other things that happen in that time might take longer too, and anything that takes longer can result in a timeout.
So just to give our listeners a little bit more feel in terms of the, you know, what the amount of work that needs to happen in this very short period of time. So what is the approximate size of the address database that that you have to search to identify you know, the address, and then, you know, how many typically hits you get out of that?
Okay, there's probably about 90 million addresses in the national database. I would say for a lot of addresses, we probably get, you know, at least 5 or 10 that we have to pick between out of the database, and there could be a lot more than that.
Great. So, well, why don't we jump on the whiteboard and you can kind of walk us through a little bit of the design of the system and how it needed to work and these sorts of things that, you know, ultimately led you to some of these technology decisions.
And another thing we were looking for was modularity. Basically, so for maintainability, separating the different parts of the system so that when we needed to make a change, it didn't have to affect everything else. And what we wanted to do was a blackboard system. Basically, the idea is you have a blackboard. And you have experts. And you can think of them kind of like an actual blackboard with academics sitting around a table looking at the blackboard trying to solve a problem. And you have this input. You have some piece of data that starts out on the blackboard, and each of these experts or academics, whatever, they only know how to solve a certain part of the problem. They only know how to work with a certain piece type of data. And so they eventually arrive at the correct answer because one expert will see this first piece of data there and they'll do something with it. And they'll put something else on there that's not the final result, but it's something that they've added to that problem. And then the next one can say, oh, well, based on that, I can do this, and I can add, you know, this to it. And they keep going like this until eventually they come up with a final answer, and that's what you send back out of the system. So we wanted a system like this. The benefit of this being, you know, these experts don't have to know about each other. They only have to know about what they're interested in, what they can do with it, and what they can put back. And in the textbook version of this, you have some sort of a token passing mechanism. It's single-threaded that determines who gets to work on the blackboard at what time. But we really wanted a multi-threaded system where these experts could work at the same time. If there's two of them that know what to do with this piece of data, they could go work on it at the same time and put their answers on there and keep going until we get the right answer. So we looked at different agent frameworks, and they didn't really, they were very, they were sort of restrictive into like BDI, behavior, desires, intentions type of experts, or different types of things that they were focused on. They didn't really let us do this like we wanted to. So we ended up having to build our own Blackboard expert framework to base this on. And at that point, what we were looking at was what kind of technologies are already out there to help us build this and make it multi-threaded, modular, without, you know, spending a whole lot of time worrying about the low-level stuff of locks and coordination and these kinds of things. So we ended up finding the CCR, the Microsoft Concurrency and Coordination Runtime, which is a .NET library that runs on the .NET framework, and it takes care of multi-threading. It doesn't use locks. It's sort of a task-based approach to multi-threading, and it was really helpful in building the foundation for this framework for us.
So what we have is here is just a demo of kind of some sort of demonstration experts running with our expert and Blackboard system. So these experts are just for demonstration purposes, but basically it creates them, and in a little bit we'll come back and see what happens in the middle here, but basically it takes this input data, which is the kind of information you get from an optical character reader, for each character on the image. It'll give you a best choice possibility and how confident it is that that's correct, and then it'll give you a few other choices and confidences on those.
So, for example, for the first N, what choices are there?
So, for this first character, N here, and this is just all the characters with the best choices, but this is an N with a confidence of 255. It also thinks it could be a 1 with a confidence of 9 or an L with a confidence of 9. And this kind of matters more on some of them where they're closer together, where this could be an O with a confidence of 239 or a 0 with a 238 or a G with a 12. Or this one could be an I or an L or a 1. Some of these characters are kind of hard for a computer to tell apart. So we have to kind of figure out which one's correct, and we can use some knowledge like here that, you know, in a zip code you're not going to see an O so we don't really have to pay attention to that very much. But anyway, for this demonstration, we have one of these experts set up to let us choose what the address actually looks like. So I can change this to a real, change this to a 0 instead of an 0. And this is the, one of these experts has taken this and basically broken down what parts of the address each of these words are. And it thinks this is a zip code, this is an add-on, this is the street name, this is not the secondary number, it is the street suffix. So we can go and change that.
So when you're changing that, what does it actually mean for other experts?
Well, in this demonstration, basically, one of these experts has gotten this input data and is now presenting it to me, and what it's going to basically put it back on the blackboard again as whatever I change it to.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever experts are interested in this will then respond to this new information and use that to do what they're going to do with it.
So essentially, when you change the address to the correct one and reposition certain things there, for example, Boulevard, you made it street suffix versus secondary number.
Mm-hmm.
The other window actually shows the how it was parsed out by another expert.
This window is just showing. We just have this input information from a file right now, so this is just showing what is actually in the file.
Okay.
So this is not going to directly show what it changed to, but we can see that it changed later. If you want to look at that. Basically, we're going to stop this part, and while this was running, we've been recording what goes on in the system in a little binary file so that we can see what happens. We can see the beginning, this OCR information was put on the blackboard, and it looks like this. That was the first thing that happened, was this post, and then...
So this initial information essentially is the top probabilities for each of the letters, right? So you just took the first choice,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And it, of course, we see that there are a number of errors there.
Yeah, and then what happens when that's posted on the blackboard is that these two experts subscribe to it, so human expert is the one that we were...
changing information into, yep.
So that got the information... And then this ZVU to text expert. ZVU is the name of that format for the data.
What is ID 0? What does that mean?
We just have a little ID number that increments for each new piece of data that gets put on the blackboard.
Okay.
That gets created. So the next one, the ZVU to text expert, is going to put in a text address, and it's just basically took the first choice and separated it out into one line, first line, second line, third line.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's posting that on the blackboard. We can see that he used what we just saw as his input, and he's posted that on the blackboard. We can see that there's two things on the blackboard now.
Yep.
And all of these experts are subscribed to that. This text address he put up. So they are going to, they all get that information now, and then they all start posting their information based on that to the blackboard. So this one's posting a street name, this one's a primary number, 3304, this one is a secondary number, Boulevard, with a 1 in there,
mm-hmm.
and all this stuff.
So right now you're just basically replaying.
And so then these things, I'm replaying. So then these things that they've been posting then get sent to the next guy who is interested in them. So the combination expert in this demo is the one who takes all these different things and tries to find all the valid combinations for
mm-hmm.
them, and he's going to post them. So if you look, it's probably going to be pretty far. It took us a while to change that address. It'll be pretty close to the end.
Next.
575.
So you're saying that there were 575 new pieces of information added to this breadboard in this little run?
Yes, because it broke down all the different choices. It's not very, these demonstration experts aren't that smart about it. They just say, anything I see that looks like it could be this, and they post it. And then the combination expert comes in and says, well, you know, this one's not valid because these two overlap, or, you know, this one part of the address was used for two different things, or whatever. Anyway, so we can see this is what we as the human expert did.
Yeah.
We have this address is what we got in, and we got to see and change, and then this is what we changed it. We changed it to...
Address,
yeah,
right?
It shows the zero in there. And
the Windsor and Boulevard.
Get that tooltip to come up.
So... These experts run concurrently, right? So when there is a piece of information that multiple experts are subscribed to, for example here, they will all process that event in parallel, right?
From the point that this notification happens, these experts are running until they stop running. So they might post something in response to it, or more than one thing, or they might just stop running. We don't have any thing in here right now that we'll say this expert stopped running, but we do have a way to track that in our system.
So essentially it's a data flow, right? So it's all kicked off by availability of data, and it's, you know, it's essentially it's a flow of data which controls the logic of this execution. Cool. Very good. Well, thank you very much.